come the SA team, but I think they are already landed from London Olympics that managed to participate in the different codes there and managed to make us count as South Africa and come up with 6 medals. Of the 3, it goes to silver and 1 bronze. And also I'd like to appreciate the department for the first time who fully supported South African delegates participants in the Olympics. Today I was listening to the radio. There were comments saying Australia didn't make it to their best because the country was not behind them, and also in Africa Nigeria. So that's why I say I'd like to appreciate the department and the South African government, and also the private sector who pledged to support to even take the families of the participants to be there to encourage our South African delegates. So we appreciate everyone who was behind this success. The matter before us today, matter for discussion, is 2 items submission by the Matatiel Maluti Youth Progressive Alliance, of which in our submission table is not only this one, but it's this one who managed to write to the speaker. That's why we are quoting them. There were many submissions from many functions in that area. The second item for discussion for today is the progress in operations and orders from the department. I don't know whether before we continue the items, I can entertain some apologies. I've only heard an apology from the minister. He's attending a ministerial committee. I remember the Honorable Nkosi Mandela. Which one, Blasa? Those are the apologies. Members, I think to say without any waste of time, we are discussing the matter of Matatiel because it has been referred to the portfolio committee by the Speaker's office. So the matter is before the portfolio committee now. So that's why we summoned the department to come and just make it between. As our argument last week when discussing the committee's program, we agreed that we're going just to listen to the briefing, maybe to ask some few questions. And we'll schedule the very same item for next week's meeting, maybe for conclusion or to put on table our committee's recommendation on the next. And we also agreed that hoping these members have received that we've asked the judgment document. And I think we need to give ourselves time to go through because it's thick. So from receiving this briefing, then we give ourselves time to go through the judgment so that we'll be able to come up with some clear recommendations, some informed clear recommendations to the department on what the department after this intervention must do. So now I'll give over to the department, maybe to give us a briefing on the matter, which is item number one, Matatiel.
Thanks, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Let me start by confirming the apology from the Minister and also apologize that I'm still acting even this week. I'm apologizing because, like I said last week, that we have the duty that is coming, is confirmed. But effectively, he will be starting on the 1st of October, but he is supposed to be with us 2 days in a week, so that we could probably do a handover. I need to also apologize that I only had the sight of one of the submissions by the Matatiele Youth Progressive Movement today, but the matter itself has been with the department for some time. We have seen some letters related to the Matatiele case being sent to the Office of the Public Protector, and we were responding as such. So the presentation is a very short one. It is not necessarily going to take much of the time. The outline is, we'll just talk a little bit about the introduction and background, and the court cases that that have happened, over the time, and the consultation processes that have happened, and a proposed way forward, which I believe honorable members may want to engage with and be able to give us some advice on the matter. The background is that prior to the 2006 local government election, Matatiele is rural villages of Malut, located under the Alfred Nzo district municipalities, were cross-boundary municipalities that were administered jointly by the KwaZulu-Natal and the Eastern Cape provinces. The enactment of the 12th Constitutional Amendment Act of 2005 by National Parliament abolished the cross-boundary municipalities so that municipalities could exclusively be managed from one province. The abolition of these cross-boundary municipalities resulted in Matatiele incorporated into Eastern Cape. The Matatiele local municipality challenged firstly the validity of the 12th Amendment Act, and the matter was heard on the 12th of February 2006. The court discovered that there were procedural issues that were relating to the correctness of the consultation of the public participation process that were involved. And on the 18th of August 2006, the court ruled in favor of the municipality and ordered that the national government satisfy the requirements of public participation within a period of 18 months. And this, the province had to deal with and adhere to the court ruling. After that consultation process, the Matatiele community filed another court application in 2008 challenging its incorporation into the Eastern Cape province. That court case was served in a constitutional court that ruled against the Matatiele community. But however, that ruling did not deter government to look at the grievances that were made by the community. Now, the government received a report during April 2009 on the consultation processes with the communities of Matatiele local municipality and other aggrieved communities. When that report was presented to government, the Minister of COGTA, on behalf of government, had to deal with further consultation, which in quite a number of circles were referred to as the referendum. But in actual fact, it was an in-depth consultation process with communities of Matatiele. So that in-depth consultation was conducted during the period of the 28th to the 31st of October 2009. And the manner in which it was conducted is afforded the community an opportunity to record and view the results published on a daily basis for the duration of the consultation. And this result was to be considered with other factors to inform government to make an informed decision on the complaint. Some of the reasons that were advanced by the communities as to why they wanted to be incorporated from one province to another where the issues around access to services as the communities in Matatiel were raising an issue of Visho being too far from Pietermaritzburg. And the second issue was around the poor or lack of service delivery in the Eastern Cape compared with the province of KZN. And that the historical location of Matatiel was between the Natal and Cape provinces in the past. Now with that in mind, we then, after receiving all the reports, we then looked at the reports and said it should be best for government to really pronounce on this matter, so that whatever comes out of the result of that consultation process inform other policy proposals that should also be looked at various committees like the portfolio committee. And therefore we wanted to put this as a way forward that government will have to pronounce on the matter in due course, and then the minister will advise the portfolio committee on the status of this matter in 3 months. So that is the short of the issue around Matatiel. Perhaps what I didn't even indicate in the presentation, which I had sight of in the letter that I saw this morning from the Progressive Movement, was the statistical information that is presented in the letter that is necessarily that is incorrect. The outcome of that in-depth consultation was that 36% of the people were in favor of remaining in the Eastern Cape, and around 62 were in favor of going to KwaZulu-Natal, and 2% of those were votes that were spoiled. So against the information that was given by that letter of 5% and 95%. So that is the only information that I wanted to really correct. The other issue, which, Chair, if you allow that, I may just mention in 1 second, is the complexity of the matter, because it is not only the Matatiel case, it's also around the issue of Mutse, between Mpumalanga and Limpopo, which is also the issue that's related to Matatiel, in the sense that all these concerned groups formed political parties that contested elections in the areas that I've mentioned, and they are party to the municipal administration in those particular areas. So our view was that even when they have participated in those elections and they are now serving in those councils, it does not necessarily negate the fact that a government needs to really make a pronouncement and be able to come with a particular policy proposals around issues of demarcation. Thanks.
Thank you, members. Here is a briefing, briefly on what happened on interventions in the Matatiel referendum issue on demarcation, on provincial delineation of cross boundaries. Before Miria could make some comments, let me allow members to come in with questions, then at the end I'll come in with some comments. I recognize Honorable Smith, Honorable Jan Hazen, Honorable Chetela, Honorable Sefale Zwai, Machoba, and Honorable Nelson.
Thank you. Yeah, this is a long speech for you. One of the things, maybe just with a comment up front, is what is the judgment, and I'm sure the department is fully aware of it, the whole issue of why we have a process of consultation required for anything is a moot point. Because if you are required to consult, and then when the people tell you something, you're free to say, well, it doesn't matter, then you really wonder what the first consultation is. But anyway, it may be that as it may. I just want to start with the speaker's letter to us. Speaker's letter to us, which says, and I just want to see if that's correct, that, and then he's referring to the Maluti, Matiati, or Maluti Congressional Youth Alliance, which say that the results of the referendum have not yet been released. I'm not quite sure. It's not obvious to me. I suspect that when they talk about that referendum there, because read their letter, they're talking about 2009. That referendum seems to be the survey, but I don't know if it's the same time frame, because it's also 2009, and the so-called referendum, if you want to call it that, was earlier. So could you get clarity on which referendum is being referred to, whose results have not been released? Because if the results have not been released and it's the survey, the results we've just been given now by the department, or 36, 62, or 2, those are survey results, were they? Yeah, survey results, not referendum results, but unless it's the same thing. I do want to ask the question of what government's actual options are anyway, because it wasn't government that decided where to locate Matatiel, it was the Municipal Demarcation Board. So the question is, then arises, if the demarcation board rules A, and now everybody's unhappy with A, and even government say maybe theoretically unhappy with A, the board has already made a decision. What policy options are there? Because the department's talking about, we will come out in 2 months' time with some options, you know, a way forward. And government will address this matter. But what power does government have to address anything? We've got an independent board, which has made a determination, and as far as I can see, there's the role for government to say there's another way to solve this matter. But I'd be interested to know, on, you know, whether that's correct. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you very much to the department for the presentation. I've just got a number of questions. The first one on page 3, and it's under the slide headed court case, which refers to the Minister of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs on behalf of government, conducted further consultation with the affected community. I'd like to just establish what type of consultation took place, what was the form of the consultation. And then much like Honourable Smith, I have some queries around the referendum slash survey. I'd like to establish what methodology was used to determine voting. Was it an IEC-run election, or was it a professional survey which the department paid consultants to do, but I'd be interested to understand how the information arrived at, and then of course the results as well. I think it would be most proper that this committee, if we're going to be deliberating the matter, had a look at the, you know, the survey questions and then the results from those as well. So we're going to require those. I then have a third question, and that's around the time frame. Certainly, if I look at the chronology of the matter, we had a court case in 2006. Followed by elections. We then had the 2008 challenge, which was the 2009 challenge. 2009 challenge, which was not successful in the Constitutional Court. And then we had the third process that was embarked upon in terms of the ministerial consultation. But I note that took place in 2009. We're sitting 3 years down the line, and you know, we're still no closer to, you know, any sort of finality. Very clear from the fact that the minister is going to require a further 3 months to deliberate on the matter, that doesn't appear that much has been happening in the intervening period. And that leads to the question, and that's what communication and interaction with the community has taken place in the intervening period from the referendum slash survey and to date, because certainly my information on the ground is that there's a great deal of growing frustration at a community who feels that they've been given the tin ear. And so, you know, I'd be very interested to know what sort of measures implemented to, you know, to interact with that community. I also just want to get clarity from the department. My understanding is that this was one of several cross-border disputes. In fact, it was some in Gauteng. My memory may be cranky, but I remember Fishback Ridge or something. There was some community in Gauteng that had been put in with the Northwest Province, and they were then reincorporated into Gauteng. Where is it?
Windella.
Yeah, there we go. But it happened about then. So, you know, there is a precedent there before. So, you know, I think it's important that we look at what process the department used in that particular instance and see if there's a law of general application that can apply in this instance. And say, you know, I think that, you know, in echoing what Honourable Smith has said, you know, government is not an exact science. It's very easy to make mistakes. And I think it's very important when, you know, mistakes, and I believe, in my opinion, this was a very clear and obvious mistake, has been made, that we move swiftly to rectify it as soon as possible. And, you know, I would certainly hope that these 3 months fly by, so that we can finally have some resolution on the matter. Thank you.
Thank you,
let me thank the presenter for what he has presented to us. I also align myself with the problems that I'm having. I would like to know the difference between the demarcation board and the government. Who's in control here when it comes to demarcation issues? Who should give a final decision? And then what led the court ruling? Because the community indicated their rejection to be in the Eastern Cape. Because we know that the government always says the government of the people and for the people. And then here in the consultation that you give report, the factors that the community gave, I would like to hear which other factors that the government gave this rule. Is there any other factors that the government gave when it gave the rule? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my honourable colleagues have covered me, because I wanted to know the legislative framework pertaining to how are we going to deal with this issue. And I wanted again to know why 3 months, and again, aren't we going to open can of worms? And because we, like you alluded to the Mpumalanga one, there are others like Agisanyo Molopo one in Northwest. Aren't we going to give people hope of saying if the demarcation board have ruled, they can come in and query? Thank you, Chair.
By my colleague. My concern to SKBG, it was a question of time. Because if it's clear now when you're giving us the percentage that 62% will be away for KZN, and then only 62%. And then now when you're saying the government will pronounce on the matter in due course, it's vague to me. And then you will say to us, the minister will advise the people on this matter in 3 months. Why so long? If this issue was 2009, and also people, what you can say, like conservation or whatever name we have used, but people have applied that 20%, they are for. Now, when the people will give us in 3 months to report, whereas we are saying they want to pronounce in due course, what does that mean? Maybe if the question of 2 months is too long, if a week or the 2 months, you know what you are supposed to do. Thanks,
Honourable Mato. I think at the end I'll address the issue of the presentation conclusion on what is the proceed. Honourable Nelson?
I think just about all the concerns that I've raised have put down have also been raised. Just for my own clarity, is the SKBG saying that they only seen this correspondence now recently? Did I hear correctly? That is the first thing. And I think Honourable Machoba and other members have also asked. Clearly for 6 years nothing has been done. So what is going to happen in the next 3 months? If nothing was has been done or could have been done by the department for 6 years. What is needed? What is 3 months still needed for? Chair, I'm also going to ask that, like one of the other members, that we get a copy of the results of the referendum. Because whether it's a semantics to me, whether you call it a referendum or you call it an in-depth survey or a consultation process, once you give people a paper to put a yes or a no, or you're calling a vote on and that is, wasn't done by anybody other than the department themselves. It didn't come from anywhere else. So the department has caused this situation. It has got the results out of this situation and it is sitting on those results. The community and I had to turn to the portfolio committee to try and get responses out of this. So my question then is asked, 6 years has passed, what difference in 3 months? Please try and explain that to us. And then I will be asking formally for the results of that referendum. We want to see, because you call it a public participation process, a consultation process, so I think the portfolio would then have to give an input, not an input, but insight into that consultation process that has taken place yet. Chair, I don't think that we're going to give the department 3 months time to deal with this issue and the portfolio. This has come before the portfolio. We've now been asked, the court has made a ruling. In 2009, the ruling has been made 3 years down the line. The department has never done anything about it. I'd be quite interested to hear on one of the other members' questions whether the department has ever engaged the community of Matasia after that judgment. So I will leave it there, Chair, but we're not going to accept the 3 months. The portfolio isn't going to accept the 3 months that the department is asking for. I think we're asking with immediate effect, Chairperson, the results of that referendum to be given with immediate effect to the portfolio committee. We've heard the department, and I think in that instance, we would be hearing what the community has said out of that referendum. So we're asking, then I think, for it formally.
To ask him to be honest with yourself and ourselves, the issue is it's not on the you now. Because the speaker brought all to us and gave this matter to us now. It's no more with you now. It's with us. That means your powers now and has gone now. Because the powers are with us. So that it is not the judges. I just clear that it's with us now.
Can I intervene on that one? Because I wanted to, I said I will have some confusion and some clarity on the conclusion of the presentation. Yes, members are true that the matter has been referred before the portfolio committee. The ball is in our court now. Your recommendation of saying that and before the committee after 3 months is out, is us who's going to recommend after going through all the court cases, but having in mind the progress, the prolonged of the case, and maybe to check even from the court judgment what deadline has been given to Parliament. So I'll agree with members because of that. I'll just make some recommendations at the end of saying that the matter is before the portfolio committee. Even the letter that has referred to the portfolio committee said the portfolio committee must exercise its powers that has been given by Parliament. So in this issue now, there must be separation of powers. I think the ball is in our court. The department is going to listen on what we are going to say and recommend after in all the processes. But I think the matter is urgent. It's a matter of urgency. For 8 months, I don't think what the department is intending to go and do there. Because all the processes are done. The only thing the people of Matasia and Maluku area want to know the results. I recognize Honorable Mabunda.
Chairperson, it's a repetition of what other members have already alluded to. One is trying to find out because when we read into and what he has just presented to us, the activity is very leaky or thin information about the demarcation, which when you look into the background itself, it indicates, I mean, just under the Matatiele was a close border. And I think it is the parliament that was abolished the close border issue. Whereby we don't know who has made it clear that Matatiele will fall within the Eastern Cape Province. Right immediately after the abolition of the cross protection. So now, if it was the government, then it would mean that the people of Matatiele were in the right way to consult with the government and tell them what they feel about being incorporated to the Eastern Cape. Unless if ever the government is so resistant, let me use that word, so resistant, in order not to clash with the demarcation board legislation. Unless otherwise the people should have been heard even before taken to court this issue. Because it's the government of the people is someone that's already indicated. The people say we want to be at this area or within this province. I think it should have been done unless if ever the demarcation board legislation stated something which is contrary to what the government was intending to. So this is just, we need a clarity. Because if we take it from what it is being discussed in the courts and so on, I think it's another step. It shows that this step of being abolished as a cross boundary has been done, the incorporation has been done. Now is the dissatisfaction of the people. That is being, you know, where the problem right now that people are taken to court. The people themselves, the department, and the pronouncement of the judgment by the Constitutional Court. Then it's another step, according to my understanding. So I think we have to get it clear from the beginning. What was wrong? What made the people not to agree with somebody's decision, whether it was the government's decision or the demarcation board decision. So I think that one will give us a clue in how we can discuss this matter. Thank you.
Members, maybe before I give over to Nelson, that's why in my introductory remarks I said we are going to refer the matter. Today you are just going to listen and have some few clarification questions. Some of your questions that you raised are being explained in the document at the judgment, the outcome of the judgment, the verdict paper. So that's why I said let us go and give ourselves time and go through that document. Like for an example, which you are going to expand much on that one, or members asking questions on why the demarcation board is not mentioned here. But the mandate of the demarcation board doesn't go beyond on provincial boundaries. That is not mentioned yet. So it's also being explained even in that verdict. That's why I said we must go back and read it very carefully so that we'll be able to come up with concrete recommendations to the department and what the department must go and do. Honourable Nelson?
Yes,
I see.
One of the
matters
made reference to precedent already being set. I'm from the Northwest Province here. And the area that was affected happens to be in my region, in the district that I am. It was Wedela. And we know exactly what happened in Wedela. So for me, Chairperson, precedent has been set. The department cannot really say they haven't gone into this open eye. Because eyes were open to other processes. There was in the Northern Cape, Northwest Gauteng. I remember the one instance in Wedela, seven people voted. there was a boycott against the election because of the demarcation issue. So, Chair, I think that we must actually be thankful to the people of Matabia that they have behaved so well in this process. Because if we look at what has happened in other areas, and I refer especially to the Northwest housing issue where they left, it was a very, very bad situation. And I think for that reason, Chair, we can't let this thing carry on as well. The department intervened, it did what it had to do, it listened to the people there. What is different with Matabia? Thank you.
Chair, just two things I forgot. We've got the court case here from 2006, but the court ruling against the application in 2008, it would be interesting to have the reasons that the court gave there in their refusal to grant the application. That was after the province complied with the ruling here. What happened next? And then, just last Chair, I personally don't have any problem with a 3-month period. It's been going on for so long. But frankly, if government applies its mind and comes up with what it considers a solution in 3 months, I'm quite happy with that. I just didn't think there's a reason why, since we haven't been seized with the matter for so long, a couple of months will make any difference. But it's up to the committee officer.
You're saying you are comfortable with the 3 months? Oh, no, of which the department hasn't tell us, come up with a proposal of 3 months. It's us who must come up with a recommendation of what they're supposed to go and do. That's why we're against the 3 months. And even if it's a department who made some proposals, that's too long. From the 6 years, these people are still waiting, and 3 months now, unless the department can come up with something good, what is it that they are going to do? Maybe to do consultation, because population has improved, or what? If there are any measures that they can give, but if us who must come up with a deadline date. I'll knock it over to you so that you will welcome some other questions or some other comments that have been raised by members.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. It shows that this is very complex. It's not as easy as even the department had anticipated it to be. There are quite a number of other questions that I will not necessarily be able to respond to because when last night we got the presentation, I was the agenda was supposed to bring the person who was involved with the process, but then I thought it is the youth progressive movement that was going to present, so I said no, it should not necessarily be coming. Let me start with the issue around the population in Matatiela. Firstly, 40% participated in the in-depth consultation through referendum. So the 62 and the 36 and the 2%, we are talking about the 2%. So there is 60% of people who did not participate in that in-depth consultation. Now, the issue of the demarcation board, Chair, you have correctly indicated. The reason why we don't have the demarcation board here is that the mandate of the demarcation board is to deal with the municipal boundaries and not necessarily provincial boundaries. So that is the reason why it is not here. Now the starting point, which is also making this matter very complex in terms of how the department deals with it, is that the matters that we are talking about in terms of housing, in terms of Muse, in terms of Matatiele, in terms of Bahamudi. It's a matter which was defined within the 12th Amendment, which is a constitutional amendment. Now, when there is a constitutional amendment, it is only the Matatiele community that challenged the constitutional amendment. That is why the matter had to go to Congress. And then the Constitutional Court ruled against us. So if inversely we were to say what was really the role of the department, the role of the department can only be defined within what the constitutional amendment had said. Now what had happened is that immediately after the 12th constitutional amendment was passed, and then the implementation of Matatiele going to Eastern Cape and Muse remaining in Limpopo and Bahamasibi remaining somewhere in Northwest, and the other section that Honorable Nelson is referring to, weapon to housing. That was supposed to be a closed case. So Matatiele went to court to challenge the constitutional amendment. That is why we find ourselves here. Now what has happened is that cabinet then said, because Matatiele went to court, even when they have lost, let's get a fee. And they were using the Ministry, Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, to conduct those in-depth consultation processes, which gave the results that I've alluded to. So the issue is the question of the 12th Amendment Act, and Honorable Smith, the issue of the court ruling. I haven't read that court ruling, so I might preempt what is in there without me having read about it. So the issue of the precedent that has been recognized around Audi, it's a precedent of the constitutional amendment. It's not necessarily the issue of saying when the people from Gauteng who were in Northwest were brought back to Gauteng was the issue that was outside the 12th Amendment Act. It was an issue of the 12th Amendment Act. So if we talk about the precedent, it would be the precedent of that Amendment Act. The issue of the demarcation board has been dealt with. Has the department engaged with the communities of Matatiele? What I know is that the former minister engaged thoroughly with the community of Mose. I'm not so certain about the communities of Matatiele, but I know that he moved around all these areas even before the 12th Amendment Act was put in place. With regard to the copy of the results of the in-depth consultation, that I think we will be able to look at it and be able to give members the that result. There was the first question of what powers the government have. In effect, the powers that government has in terms of it being the executive that has to implement what the Act says. The only powers that they have at the moment is to recommend back to the Portfolio Committee, because the Act is the product of the legislature, not necessarily the executive. So in real fact is that what the department was seeking to do was just to put together the memorandum to cabinet, and when cabinet had pronounced that pronouncement will then have to be communicated to the portfolio through the portfolio committee to the legislature, and then the legislature will have to make a ruling around that. The department, what it has now is that it has to implement what the 12th Amendment Act says. Mm-hmm. Now, because cabinet says do further consultation on the area and see mm-hmm. what are the issues that have been raised. Mm-hmm. So we need to go back to cabinet and say these are the areas that people have raised.
Now?
Yes.
From this process now, we need to go back.
Now, isn't it we have the results that we have not necessarily communicated to the cabinet?
I'm interested in you because I'm trying to think. That's when you're establishing now to take the matter back to cabinet. Hence, it's cabinet to give you an authority to go and exercise and consult with those people there. And you were supposed then to go back and report back to cabinet and tell them about the results. But I'm saying it's too late now to do that.
That is why I was saying, Honorable Chair, that the result of this in-depth consultation has not been formally communicated to cabinet.
What was the problem? Is it difficult to answer?
I mean, not necessarily be able to engage because of the challenges that the department had in terms of changes that have happened. But the reality is that that matter has not gone back to cabinet.
I must now just nicely word this correctly. Immaterial, there's a new minister, an acting DG, a new DG, new people in the department. When office is assumed, you take responsibility for whatever is happening in that office. And so when anybody, whether it be the minister or the acting DG or the DG, comes to the portfolio, one would assume that there's been internal processes within the department, that whoever has been in the department working with processes, that meetings would have been held and proper briefing sessions would have been held and handover. And this agenda is has been approved quite some time ago. It's been on the agenda. So I would have expected that it would have been well trodden through before the department got to this meeting, so that all possible answers would be available for questions raised. Immaterial, whether it is who was part of the process, who was not part of the process, who was in the department, who was not in the department, who was the minister, and who was not the minister. I would have expected that to happen. Okay.
You don't look like now that now this is before the parliament now. There's no more with the department, nor the minister, no, the minister. Now it's with the parliament, then the parliament must thrown out now. Instead of going back, you know, this must go back to the department, to the minister, for all that. Now that now the parliament decided to take it over now, to take it in, and this will be up now. I'm sure the situation is instead of going back. Now that whether it was the minister, there was the issue was not them, and also minister on the stage of minister. But now it's with the parliament. So whether you are another post now, you must know that it's no more with the ministry, it's no more with the department, it's with the parliament itself now.
No, Chair, I think the concern that is being raised is correct. But I think for me to even talk about the processes of handover, it would not be correct, because if the DG had resigned with immediate effect, there was no error. But that is not necessarily the excuse that one should be able to give here. I think, like I indicated, that there are people that are dealing with the matter. All the information that I'm providing now is the information that I got from the people that are dealing with the matter. It's only that when it goes to the deeper issues, it will be best for those people who were handling the matter even before, since 2008, to really give that particular information. And when I look at all these questions, I think I have almost dealt with the critical issues that were raised. I've dealt with the issue of the powers that the government have, and the understanding is that this matter is now supposed to go back to the legislature. In which case we will have to be directed as to what is it that the executive needs to be doing. With regard to the survey results, we will make that available to the committee. The issue of the law of general application, I've indicated that in terms of the 12th Amendment Act. Because that should have been the issue that could have been dealt with at that level. I've dealt with the issue of the difference of the board and the government. The issue of what led to the court ruling in the manner that it has ruled I may not necessarily be able to respond to that question. And what are the factors the court might have looked at? I may not necessarily be able to respond to the issue that the court had looked at. The issue of the precedent, I've already dealt with that, and the issue of the court ruling, I've also responded to that. So my view is that some of the questions were really questions that are responded to in terms of the Draft Amendment Act, Constitutional Amendment Act.
Members, I can submit that what you want to have a point, but to respond, okay, I'll give you an opportunity. To respond to your last comment, which you are saying that it's necessary that you take the matter, you must understand the two cabinets. You must understand that there are three arms in this government, executive, judiciary, and parliament. And the matter has gone through, from executive, gone through to judiciary, now in parliament. You can do your own processes, you can't stop that, but see, now at the end, this is the matter before parliament, you need to come up with some recommendations and the deadline as you discuss it, as expected. Expect you to meet those deadlines, but your process on that other side you could do is taking in mind that there are on those government there are separation of powers. John, you want to come?
Madam Chair, thank you. So just follow up to my initial question, and that's the 3-year intervening period. I would like to know what's been happening in the intervening period. Because if we're hearing from the department that there's somebody, and I use the word loosely, dealing with the matter, then clearly they have been dragging their feet or they have not been dealing with matters. So perhaps the activity you could arrange for when we next convene to discuss this matter, that the person who's been allegedly dealing with the matter can come before the committee and explain to us what exactly they've been doing in terms of protecting it. Because really this is a frustration that people have with us as partners and government. We have our logo, we the people. But when the people talk, are we really listening? And this is a classic case of people have now had a 10-year for 3 years. How many state house committees when we go there?
I will support you in that respect, saying that in our next presentation, I think all the people who participated in this process have come before the committee so that they would exactly explain, and I think it's going to be our last meeting and this is then we'll take a decision, not with some recommendations. Honourable Nen wanted to come in?
Can I
see the problem? Why? Arrange to get next one. For record, the purpose is all.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to find out if the acting DG still insists on being given 3 months, and if so, what is it that he is going to be doing in that 3 months? And the DG has alluded to the fact that only 40% of the population of Matatiel has voted. And I want to say that you cannot use that argument of 40% as a reason to nullify the validity of the votes of the people of Matatiel. Even in this country, having 40 million people,
46.
Then 36, whatever.
46.
Another one, let's say 50 then. The number keeps on escalating. If we have 50 people in this country and we have only 30 going to the polls during elections, we can never nullify those elections and say only 30% voted and therefore the government that is voted cannot take power, assume power. Those people, 40% as they are, have actually represented members of Matatiele who did not go to the polls and exercise their rights. So it stands. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I'll start with the last one. I was not saying we are nullifying, we're just putting as a matter of fact what has happened. Not necessarily to say the result may not necessarily be holding. The issue of the 3 months, it may be an issue that the Chair said she would want to deal with that. My view was that in the 3 months we need to finalize the processes of informing cabinet officially. So that was the view of the department.
My problem, DG, is that if we didn't bring the mess on the table, when were you going to arrange that? And fix the So that's why I was saying that we don't entertain your 3 months, it's your own process, but as I said, we'll come up with our own.
Yeah, I just want to say, I mean, at least from the doctor's view, the Eastern Cape Legislature did was, which was, it doesn't matter where you live, but there's a problem in the Eastern Cape, so we need to improve service delivery. That's the first day of it. But if you pull that one, drop that one, it only adds two real choices facing everybody. That is, you stick to the status quo, or you introduce a new constitutional amendment, reversing the previous proposal, or decision. Those are the only options, really. Now, it's interesting that if you're applying your mind to this...
Since they're there, Peter, how are they going to do it? Because here we're dealing about the judgment, the verdict of saying the matter must be referred back to Parliament. It's not now the ball, it's not in the court of the department that's saying now we are having some other options of maybe we can do the same thing.
That was a long time ago. That's not the current position.
Yes, but the
that was in 2000 and...
That's what I'm saying. Let us not just go around the circle. Let's go and read this thing and come up with some concrete recommendations.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm written that, yeah.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, that's the 2006, the Parliament's given 18 months
yeah.
to remedy things. That happened. I mean, according to the memo, it did happen, and when the new process took place, and after that, Safi objected again, and the court threw out this, sorry, tough luck, the process was over.
Mm.
So I'm saying, that's the status quo. That's what happened in 2009. 3 years ago, the issue is technically settled, legally settled. The only issue was political. We either say, we made the right decision back in 2006 to leave it alone. That's what you guys are proposing to go to cabinet to say leave it alone or undo it. I don't know what other decisions you've got, what other options you've got. So it'd be interesting to know, you know, what process is going to be internally. And I imagine this goes way beyond government, and your party is obviously going to get very involved with the party. That's a simple matter, because that's precisely why processes changed back in 2006. I mean, why did any of the tail changes made?
Yeah.
I mean, very, and object to things, not object to other things. I mean, it's very interesting, it's all political.
You guys have to decide.
Did you attend? No, but let's proceed to the second item. On the note of saying that you agree that you receive a briefing, we'll notify the DG on where are we going to put it on our program. So that will come maybe for the last time on this item and take a decision on it. Our second item is progress and operations in audit. This is over to you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I'm going to ask Ligazi to make the presentation, but just to upfront indicate that when we did the presentation, we...
Did you maybe before we continue, on media members, is there on of this recording device?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm asking because I'm not, I don't like me, myself, maybe other members of the committee, a person just to leave the device here and leave not in attending to it. So if you are here, it's fine. Did you?
Yeah, I just wanted to indicate that there was certain information that we had hoped that the AG was going to be presenting. So, for instance, there were certain slides that we had to remove relating to issues of root causes. But if the honorable members have questions, that might not necessarily be linked to some of the issues that will be presented. We will be obliged to provide certain information and certain answers. Otherwise, the annexures that we tried to provide was annexures that were also relating to some of the information that we could not necessarily put in the presentation. I'll allow my colleague, Mr. Chu, take you through the presentation.
Well, in terms of the outline of the presentation, it is as it is on the screen, is to say that there is a typo on point number 4. What we have there is 2008-09 to 2010-11 municipal audit outcomes as opposed to municipal accounting officers. But the rules came around as the ATG was saying that there were a number of slides which we started churning around because when we thought that the ATG would be here. We hereby present to the Portfolio Committee a conservative state of municipalities on audit outcomes for the financial year 2010-2011, 2009-2010, and 2008-09, which is a 3-year comparison. This is due to allow the committee to analyze the by general 2010-2011 municipal audit outcome. We also submit for the portfolio committee to note to the state of the performance by provision, a national department as well as other state entities reflected in the respective AG reporting framework. And that is what the ATG was talking to in terms of some of the annexures which we have provided, but some of the information did not necessarily in the presentation itself, but some of the things I will talk to them on. Well, we do as we analyze how big the challenge is and how much we have to do in mobilizing all actors to work together in the spirit of collaborative government to turn the situation around with the aim of achieving the local government turnaround strategies to aim, which are to build confidence between the people and the government and build a model of municipality characterized by the ability to provide quality services, uphold good governance, enhance sound financial management, roll out and maintain infrastructure as well as fight corruption effectively. We present additional information related to the state of public protest for the period of 2004 to June 2012 with a view to facilitate the Portfolio Committee's evaluation of the trend. As public discourse suggests, a close connection between the protest and the picture reflected as per the current Auditor General's report on the audit outcome. So most of that information is in the answer, but when I get into the slides, there will be something around 2025, I think the bulk of those trends are in the answer. Audit outcomes are financial performance accounting systems in terms of which the Auditor General presents a report on the performance of government departments, municipalities and state-owned entities, reflecting on equal performance and providing detailed indicated management letters indicating what each unit should do. The picture of performance will be good against the background that government has set a target in terms of one of the turnaround strategy projects, so that is operating team audit. Directing as follows, that in terms of the 2010-2011, we should not have had a single municipality achieving a diploma or advanced rating, and that at least 60% of the 278 municipalities, because now we no longer have 80. We used to have 283 municipalities, but now we do 78. So the received unqualified audit opinion by the 2011-2012 municipal financial year. That municipalities achieving unqualified audit opinion should increase to 75 by 2014, and that by 2014 all municipalities should have a clean audit opinion.
Well, this slide I won't get into it too much, just summarize some of this category of which the auditor general uses in classifying the program or the state in which, whether it's national or provincial or municipalities are. The perfect one is the clean audit, which is the first one there, because all right, that says that in terms of the financial affairs of the municipality, there are no concerns and there are no other issues of concerns or findings. Because if you look at the performance information that is predetermined, it as well as compliance with laws and regulations, those municipalities which fall into that category, there are no issues about. So that is the highest one, which is the perfect. The second is those municipalities which are financial and qualified, which if we were primarily to look at municipalities from the financial perspective in terms of the annual financial system, they are to a greater extent, there are no issues there. It's only the issues which I have already alluded to, the predetermined objectives as well as compliance with laws and regulations. Then the other ones which have concerns are those last things, that is those municipalities which get qualified audit opinion as well as adverse and disclaimer, with the adverse and the disclaimer being the greatest concern of them all. So that is the reason, even in terms of the target. The target was that those were the first two categories which we as government we had to wipe out. The details of the audit outcomes are as follows. The clear comparison is presented in Annex A. It must be noted that the issue is the status quo as of the 27th of July 2012. So if you were, it's one of those answers which are provided, but the reason we are stressing that we are talking about the 27th of July 2012, in terms of the consolidated local government audit outcomes, which the Auditor General released some few weeks ago, either 2 or 3 weeks ago, primarily you will find that most of the information has had a cut of things as of the end of January 2012, which is the legislative deadline. But what we have done was liaising with provinces to get some of the information as the AG is continuing in terms of the municipalities where the audit is not issued by that particular time as to what the things are. So we find that between the information which we are presenting and that which is there in the general consolidated audit outcomes of municipalities, what we have is much more updated, because we find that, for example, at the last stage the AG was talking about, I think it was close to 39 or 40 municipalities where the audit outcomes were not yet issued. But that number has reduced, as you will see when it starts progressing. So because we just wanted to get the status as these on the letter information. There are 7 municipalities that did not submit their annual financial statement. Actually, that we need to make a correction is 8, because in the Northwest, rather than 5, 6, and I will explain why it is like that. So there are 8 municipalities that did not submit their annual financial statement. So as of the 27th of July, the annual financial statements were not yet submitted to the Auditor General. One is in the Free State, and that is Malan Municipality. In the Northern Cape, there is the Renosberg local municipality. In the Northwest, there are those 5 municipalities which are listed there. But in terms of this 7, the one in the Free State, the one in the Northern Cape, and these 5 in the Northwest, those the provincial treasury and to some extent the national treasury through the deployment of the municipal finance improvement program advisors we talked about last week, they are assisting some of those municipalities. So the one which makes it 8, which is the 6th in the Northwest, is because in terms of that one, the municipality, that is Dr. Ruth Sehomot, State Municipality, the municipality itself has already had its own consultant for assistance. So that one is separate from the others. The others is government. the provincial treasurers and the national treasurers assistant general. So that one is different in the sense of that the provincial treasurers are not involved. So it's important in the Northwest, it's so the bulk is in the Northwest. Now, in terms of the 5-year comparison, 3-year comparison we talked about, that is from the 2008-09 up to 2010-11 initial audit outcome. The data of the initial 2008 is summarized in this particular slide. You will see in terms of the team audit, which is that highest category of the IG, which would like municipalities well as well as provincial departments and maybe maybe to be operating at that level, if everything is ideal, there are no issues. It moved from 0.3% in 2008-09 to 2% in 2009-10 to 5% in 2010-11. And we also need to make it clear here, in terms of this analysis we did, it's not based on the 283 municipalities, but 278 municipalities. So we have taken the 278 municipalities which exist as we speak. So our comparison is based on that. So you'll find that some of those municipalities which got this established are not part of this, because we want that in terms of those municipalities which exist, because those which no longer exist, they are no longer really, except for historical reasons, it no longer matters. So that's the risk statistics are based on the service analysis. Then the second category, which is financial and qualified, but with findings, that is the information. So if you look at row number 3, which says that what are the municipalities which, from the financial perspective, they are doing well. That is what the third row is doing, because it combines the clean audit as well as those municipalities which from the financial statement, there are no issues there. The only issues is the compliance with regulations and laws and performance information. So it shows that from 2008-09 we are at 46%, 45%. We are at 46% in terms of the 2010-2011 municipal audit outcome. Then in terms of those targets we talked about, that we didn't want any municipality to have an adversary to say, but we didn't achieve it, as you see that for 2010-2011. In terms of those municipalities with adverse, it's 5%, and in terms of disclaimer, it's only 8%. Now, in terms of the audits which were not issued as of the 27th of July this year, we had about 6% of the municipalities falling into that. Of those, the others which I talked about in terms of the annual financial statements are ones which are reflected below the, after the total number of municipalities. That is the annual financial statement submission of dealing with the parents. So those are the ones which I have already spoken to. If you go to the right column, the last column, now there are certain observations which are coming up as to where we are making a comment on the movement on the audit outcome. One of the first observations is that the lack of forward movement over the years primarily comes around because of two reasons. Maybe you have municipalities which are stagnant. And for example, the Western Cape falls into that particular category to some extent, as well as housing to some extent. So you find that although some of these municipalities are doing well from the financial perspective, but for them to migrate to the clean audit, they have not yet moved. So those are some of the things. But we also have those which are stagnant, which are in those 3 years, which are problematic, that is those municipalities which are qualified adverse and disclaimer. Then the second reason, you find that there are municipalities which go backwards, in the sense that in one financial year you find that probably it was financial and qualified, then in the next financial year, then it progresses to become qualified. So those are some of the things which are responsible. Rather than us having to sustain an upward improvement trend, you find that these steps are not moving as they should move. In terms of the rules, 5% of municipalities with, in terms of those municipalities which have changed clean oil. So for example, in terms of the 2009 test, out of the 7%, out of the 7 municipalities which had clean oil, 2 of these municipalities regressed. So they didn't achieve. So they went backwards to financially are qualified by these findings on the predetermined objective, as well as the compliance with laws and regulations. And one of them, which also regressed, is one of those which is now disestablished, which is no longer existing. So three of them went backwards. Now, we moved from 2% to 5%, but if those three municipalities should have remained where it was, the research should have gone slightly higher. So this is what we're saying when we said, what is behind some of the things with those movements. Out of the 217 municipalities to which audits were issued during the 2010-2011, that is as of the 27th of July, 2020, 15% of those municipalities have made an improvement. So they moved from one tier to the next, whereas 16% of them regressed. They went backwards. Then the remainder is 63%, which remained unchanged. So that is the pattern if you were to compare the movement from 2009-10 financial year up to the 2010-2011 financial year. From the 2008-09 financial year to 2009-10 financial year, that is not in terms of the percentage, but you had 67 municipalities which improved. These are the 15% with regress, and 165 municipalities which remained unchanged. Now, probably on this slide, before I move to the next one, on the clean audit, because we have already indicated that in the annex statute, you have, there is also the information on the provincial department as well as on national government department. If you were to take, for example, that category of clean audit and look at it across the 3 years of government, you will find that, for example, for municipalities is 5%, which is what is already reflected there. But in terms of the national department, in terms of those departments which exist in audit, it will amount to about 6.7% due to the arithmetic, because it's three national departments which have been registered before defined. So it will amount to about 6.7%. In terms of the provincial departments, out of about 127 of them which are in those annexes, if only 15 which relate in audit, which comes to about 10%. So if we were to look at the risk 3 years comparatively in terms of clean audit, local government is at 5%, then at 6.7% is national government, then at 10% is the provincial sphere of government. Now, in terms of the 2010-2011 municipal audit outcome, this is what it looks at. This is that it provides the provincial breakdown as to what is happening. But I will mainly concentrate on row number three, that is financial and qualified financial statement, because that is the one which indicates that I alluded to previously, that from the financial perspective, that category of municipality are doing well. It's only that there are these other issues we need to deal with in terms of compliance with laws and regulations as well as the performance information. You will see that we said that for the 2011-2012 municipal audit outcome in terms of our target, about 60% of municipalities should be operating at this level, which now nationally in terms of the 2010-2011 we are at 46%, but already 3 points, those which are in green, that is housing at 67%, KZN at 85%, and the Western Cape at 80%. They are already above that threshold already in the 2010-2011 financial year before we get into the 2011-2012 in which about 60% was relating to. So that is that in terms of, and this also explained when we were interacting with the committee last week, when we said, for example, when we were talking about impact as to why there were 15 provinces which we were at the political level, we were also prioritizing, for example, the free state is at 81% of them. But the Limpopo already was moving on this up, so that is also contextualized as why we're talking about when we talked about some of the political interventions we have up in terms of prioritization, because those provinces were in terms of this breakdown in terms of 2010-2011. That is where more of the concentrated effort, and I think even in terms of oversight from the Olympic military and everybody else, that is where also emphasis also need to be put, not to say that for housing and KZN and Western Cape, there should be not be anything there, but because all these municipalities have to be encouraged to migrate to the higher level, but the biggest challenge is those Arctic provinces which are reflected. In terms of the movement in municipalities outcome to the province from 2009-10 to 2010-2011, these slides provide as what was written within each province in terms of the improvement, in terms of those municipalities which were stagnant, in terms of those municipalities which were in which there were regression, which were going backwards. You see, for example, if you look at the Eastern Cape, we had a 2% marginal gain in the sense that whereas those municipalities which regressed were in this constituted 27%, those which made improvement were 29%. So if you look at what is the net gain there, it's 2%. So the same, you can look at it in that particular trend. If you look, for example, at the Northern Cape, whereas we had 9% improvement, the regression was at 19%. So actually, you end up having a net loss because of what was taken within that particular project. So that is what the slide is trying to assist the parliament to understand what was happening within the various provinces. Now, as the AG issued the budget outcome, in order for municipalities to move or to make improvement, what has to happen is that municipalities have to address the issues which the Auditor General is raising. And the manner to do that is for municipalities to develop municipal audit remedial action plans, which are actually are the action steps about the issues which have been addressed, how you're going to go around addressing them so that your eyes is on the ball so that you start making improvements. So this particular, this slide indicates as to what some of the information that we had through the provinces, and it may not be up to date in the sense that you see on the last column there, the first column, we indicate the date as to what those steps were pertaining to. So you might find that as we are speaking that in some of those provinces, those steps have increased. But the one which I will talk to is the Northern Cape. It indicated that here that there were about 50% of municipalities which had the Strategic Commission Action Plan as of the 2nd of April 2012. But that information has actually drastically changed already, because as of the 20th of July, that has increased to 78%, so it's no longer 53%. It's at 78%, which pushes the national total from 86 to 89%. So nationally, 89% of the municipalities as of the 20th of July, they have this audit remedial action plan to deal with the issues which the AG was raising. Now, if it's at 89%, if you add the 6%, in terms of the earlier slide we presented, we said that there was, as of the 27th of July, there were about 6% of municipalities to which the audit outcomes were not yet issued. So if you say 89% plus that 60, it takes you to about 95%, which means that it's only about 5% of municipalities which didn't have this audit remedial action plan as we have taken. But as I have already qualified that statement earlier, it may even be higher, because these movements were increasing, because as the AG issues, the only outcome to the provinces are prevailing upon municipalities for them to start addressing some of these issues. So even that, this other 5%, which one can say is outstanding, it might even be less if one looks at it from that perspective. Again, for the reasons indicated in the introduction, we present a trend analysis done on service delivery protests. which is in the one of the annexes which were provided for the period 2004 to June 2012. However, in terms of what we have here in the slide presentation, it's only for me and June 2012. So the bulk of the information over those years is in the document which we provided. But the list does give an indication which provides the number of protests which happened to that particular municipality. And we also map out the 2010-2011 audit outcomes in order to enable the parliament to make its own conclusions about whether there is a correlation in terms of the thing. For example, if you look, what is striking is that, I think it's three slides, they probably let me go through them. I won't be reading them, so you're just looking at them as they are. For example, if you look at Bushbuck Ridge, there in Mpumalanga and Mbombela in Bushbuck Ridge, financially they are unqualified. But the thing, the two of those municipalities, they have had seven protests. These are the Albert Lutulu in Mpumalanga, which has got a disclaimer, and disclaimer is to the west of them all, because the AGC, although there is no documentation on us, so I'm not in a position even to even start pronouncing as to what is it, but they only had one protest in that particular municipality. You look at how then Ekurhuleni, which is financially unqualified, it had about three protests there. So for me, it looks like it's slightly of what I can call a mixed bag, actually, where it is difficult to come to a conclusion that if you look at this trend generally, one can conclude authoritatively that because of these audit outcomes and the protests, they go together. Again, if you look at this one for Limpopo, if you look at Polokwane, it had four protests. It was qualified. There were issues on the financial statement, but it was not an adverse or disclaimer. But if you look at Greater Gyan, which is the disclaimer, it only had one protest. The same, if you look at the Northern Cape in Sobong, it had a disclaimer, it had only one protest. Makamahara, which is financial and qualified, it also had one protest. If you go to the Northwest, I won't talk to it because things there make sense. Those are the municipalities where most of the annual financial statements have not yet been submitted to their serious issues to the party. If you look at the Western Cape, for example, if you look at the city of Cape Town, which is financial and qualified, it had four protests. So basically what the things may be saying is if one had to look at the protest rather than strictly having to correlate the things with the audit outcomes, one might need to look at some other issues because the municipality may be doing well. It might be that if you look at it in terms of the geographical thing, you might find some of the constituent areas of that particular municipality is where the protests are coming from. So although the municipality in general may be doing well, you might find that in terms of some of the things which people themselves look at them as being too much passionate, which may take them to be marching and protesting, those are the things which are not being dealt with. And that is the same thing for municipalities which have got disclaimer or adverse opinion. It's either that some of the things which are being in terms of the people, when they look at them, it's fine, but it doesn't mean that those municipalities don't have issues. What is our observations regarding all these things? The municipal audit outcomes are instructive for us to work harder if we are to succeed in realizing the objectives we set ourselves as government of achieving audit ratings so that we'll stick to a modern municipality or an ideal municipality we refer to earlier. We will take a cue of success stories in provinces, municipalities, and entities that are doing well, and continue in the spirit of cooperative governance to mobilize support for local governments. There are five focus areas in which we must get things right to achieve effective, efficient, and accountable local government, namely government, financial management, service delivery, infrastructure, and fighting corruption. Again, when we talked earlier about the issue of service delivery protest, it might be that some of the things emanate because of this basket of these five agenda items. If you look at it from the governance perspective, so there are about 84% of municipalities with the Municipal Public Account Committees, as we presented last week. 91% of municipalities with audit committees, 79% of municipalities with internal audit units. However, as the legislature, as you interact with provinces and municipalities, one of the things which is coming out from the general consolidated audit outcomes is in terms of the effectiveness of some of these structures. And one of those things which is also coming up is to the extent, for example, if you look at the audit committee, the interface is with the executive, so they may be there. But if you were to do a site, if you were to go to a particular municipality, one of the questions which you might need to ask is, indeed you do have an audit committee, but how often and to what extent does this interface with the executive of the municipality? Because it's when all those things happen together that you will have a municipality being able to move forward. If you have an internal audit unit which is well staffed, again, because those are the issues. You may say that you have an internal audit unit, but if you were to ask the question, for example, if it is a net for how many officials are serving in that particular internal audit unit, it starts giving you a particular scheme, because you will have to look at the size of the municipality, which also talks to the complexities of the issues with the rules internal auditors have to deal with, including the audit committee and the municipal public account committee. There is 72% of municipalities with municipal manager positions filled, while 88% were still vacant as of March 2012. So as of March 2012, there were 28% vacancies in the filling of the municipal manager's position. In terms of the chief financial officer's position for the same period, there were about 22% vacancies. And the reason we are saying this is because for stability in a municipality to happen, ideally you should have the MM position and the CFO's position still, because those have got a greater impact in terms of the direction, in terms of the accountability and giving direction for the municipality. So if you have acting positions in that, at that particular level, it might not assist even the effort, even when provincial government departments go there and assist some of those things which they go there to assist, then you will need the municipality to actually get involved in terms of absorbing that support. And that is one tier of the administration which it should assist to ensure that some of the things happen, so that you don't have a situation wherein when that support pulls out, you find that the municipality regressive to some extent. But it doesn't mean that the other positions should not be filled. But we are saying that if one was to prioritize, these are the two tier management positions which have to be prioritized. In terms of financial management, most municipalities are grant dependent, that we know. And there is a high level of consumer debt. The legislature is aware of that already through some of the briefings which have been made. There is non-adherence to regulations, especially the supply chain management regulations. And those are the issues which, through the LGTAR, that is the local government turnaround strategies, and the various support measures which national departments as well as provincial government departments are trying to deal with some of these issues. Some of them have got a reference to some of the reforms which government itself is looking at, but some are issues of compliance. In terms of service delivery, conditional grants are sometimes used in certain municipalities for operational activities like salaries. Again, those are explaining also why, in terms of the audit outcomes, you find some of them having some of those challenges, because these are some of the things which the auditor general also look into. There is underspending on conditional grant spending as well. There is a shortage of skills in various municipalities, so there is vandalization of infrastructure by communities during protest. In terms of infrastructure delivery, municipalities are inadequately budgeting for repairs and maintenance. However, the National Treasury is starting to grapple with that through the standard part of accounting which they are busy with, which will assist in order to ensure that the things are taken care of in terms of some of the process going forward. The quality of infrastructure delivered is also very poor in certain instances, and that also justifies to some extent as to why indeed the municipal infrastructure support the municipal infrastructure support agency is also relevant in terms of some of the interventions through that agency. It has to be done in terms of fighting corruption. Like we said, the supply chain management processes are not followed in certain instances. There is in certain instances, issues or allegations of corruption are not brought to finality. So those are some of the issues which have to be tackled and we have to continue. But if you look at some of the things of fighting corruption, some of it you have to deal with inculcating, you know, the good ethics and integrity in politics. But as our political principles at the national level and one or another have fallen, some of the things are a matter of law having to take its due course in certain instances. Because some of these issues, if there are some of these issues, they just need to be investigated and through the law, by the law enforcement agencies and deal with them, because there are two different issues. There are issues where people may require awareness by way of campaigns, there are issues that people may not be aware. But if you deal with things with a deliberate rate of flagrant, you know, flouting of laws, then that's been something you cannot talk about having to deal with some of those issues through the issues of ethics campaigns and all the things, which actually underlines the slogan that local government is everybody's business, because the law enforcement agencies have to do their part. The general consolidated audit outcomes are already out there. So whether it's the South African police or any law enforcement agencies, if they want to see what are the issues which are coming from local government, what are the municipalities, probably they need to concentrate upon in terms of their investigation. That information is out there. And also if you look at it in terms of the audit outcomes, those are also publicly available in the National Treasury website. And so it's only when all spheres of government and the various government entities, based on their functional mandate, do what they're supposed to do, that we can have municipalities improving upon where they are supposed to go. The establishment of the municipal investment, municipal infrastructure support agency will assist in the multiple challenges faced in municipalities. 108 municipalities identified, 108 municipalities identified using the diagnostic analysis of MISA. That process has already been finalized. And in terms of support, it's got to see how those municipalities are supported. Provincial plans that focus on areas mentioned above have been finalized. The deployment of service delivery facilities to municipalities to deal with governance matters. There are also 75 financial experts deployed by the National Treasury through the Municipal Finance Improvement Program, which we talked about last week, to municipalities that require assistance. And the majority of these deployees are in municipalities that obtain unfavorable audit opinions. In terms of the conclusion, the political leadership in the municipal environment must take keen interest and provide regular oversight on issues raised in the management letter. If this is achieved, then consequences management will be applied and in many instances will deter certain practices at the municipal phase. It should also be noted that the support by national and provincial government may be required, but we have not achieved a modified audit opinion at that level as well. Well, in terms of what we are saying in the conclusion, it also slightly talks to what the opening speaker made mention of in the beginning when he said earlier on when we thought, before we thought that the AG will be here, we were approaching the presentation differently, but later on when we thought that the EG would be here, there were a number of things which we started taking out in terms of what we thought would be sharing with the committee. But one of the things which the AG in terms of those general consolidated local government audit outcomes, the raises, is what he calls root causes behind some of the issues which are happening at local government level. And in that regard, the Auditor General comes with three root causes. The first one, he says that key officials lack minimum competencies and skills. The second is that there is a lack of consequences, for poor performance and transgression at the municipal level. The third one, which is the last, is a slow response to the age message and not taking ownership of key control. Earlier on, when we talked, for example, around issues around the development, the implementation and monitoring of municipal, municipal audit remedial action plan, that is what it was talking to as well to some extent, that last report. So it is this, there are a number of issues which, as we all know, local government has to be supported, but some of the causes also emanate from this thing. If you look at the 78 municipalities, for example, that received FEMA and advert audit opinion in the 2011 financial year, the three root causes apply to 86% of those municipalities. So in terms of those three root causes for the AGS identified, those municipalities which are the same as and others, audit opinions, 86% of them have got these three root causes applying to them across the board. While in terms of those which either two of these root causes apply, is about 10%. And in terms where you find that one of these root causes apply is about 4%. So, but those are some of the issues which one has to look at how that general consolidated audit report of the AG release it could be used by both of the provincial legislatures as well as parliament when they interact with municipalities is also to ask questions around those particular issues. Because support may be there as well, but also is when we check the thing in a multi-faceted approach that we'll be able to make some positive movements in order to deal with this thing. The thing that you rightly corrected me last week, that I should not hand over to him because it is not his meeting. And with that, I will ask the chairperson to allow him, if there are some other things I may not have covered, to pronounce on those. Thank you.
Did you want to add something or just get into questions from any of the panel?
Nothing to add. I think we will just try to provide the response.
Okay. Must, do you need 5 minutes stretching? Nothing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let me recognize some hands. I recognize some of the colleague reply, Honorable Smith, Honorable Stevens, and Honorable DiCicello. And I will melt them. And that's all.
Chairperson, I don't know if it is possible for the department to really give us the remedial action which will be taken across those municipalities which perform very badly. Like I'm looking at Northern Cape. We will really want to know what are you going to do. And another thing, that really, the audit outcome, do they really tell the ministry delivery at the ground? I heard a presenter comparing the unqualified audits with protest. Protest, incidents of protest, because sometimes we see that people don't are out to reconcile a report at the end of the day because they have met
the records or the what was expected, those documents which were expected. But in actual fact, when we go to the ground, it's not what is really shown there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, maybe first, a thank to the public. I think it was a really good presentation. It was thorough enough and somewhat confusing at parts, to be honest. A bit of a mixed bag of results. But I've got comments as well as questions. Okay, let's try this. Chair, the department, Lillian, makes a comment we're going to have to work harder if we're going to succeed in achieving the objectives set out at the beginning. I suggest that working harder won't do it. You'll have to achieve the impossible, because it seems patently obvious to me that your targets will not be met. I mean, it's physically, I would think, impossible that the three targets set out in point 5 can be met. Because you're saying, by last year, one should receive disabled weapons, and we see we have a long list of those. 60% should receive unqualified by this year, 8 to happen, and unqualified should increase to 75% by next year. Well, if you achieve that, gentlemen, I don't have to, but I'd eat it. And I did have one, because it's not going to happen. So, you know, the question does arise whether there might be some merit in, if I'm right, you might disagree with me, but if I'm right, you might decide you might want to set some more realistic targets, because targets which seem to be unachievable. Now, I say that because if you look at slide 8, which is a very interesting slide, it's the one where you set out the comparative figures over 3 years. And what strikes me about it is, in fact, how that there is progress, according to the slide. That's great. Any progress is good. But the rate of change, the rate of improvement, is just ridiculously slow. So if you take, for example, you might want to put the slide up, the members will be talking from the same figure, slide 8. See those bottom graphs. See the bottom where it says qualified adverse disclaimer and orders not issued. You add those figures for each year, right? There's that, basically those are the bum ones. And anything above that's good. So qualified adverse disclaimer orders. Now 2008 and 9, they come to 58% of the total. 2009-10, it's only 56. So it makes 2% improvement. If it comes to now, 2010-11, it's 54%. So you're getting about a 2% improvement per year. Now if you carry on at that rate, this municipal turnaround strategy is going to have to be, you know, the next century before we complete the target. So my real issue is here is how do you accelerate the improvement that you show there? It's just too slow. Now, I know that the speaker spoke to stagnant and regretting municipalities. If you're stagnant, it doesn't mean you're in a bad position. I mean, you might have an unqualified audit and be doing very, very well, so you're just not moving up into clean. So it's not necessarily the end of the universe. But the poor performance municipalities, they don't need to be moving quickly enough. And if you, and, you know, if I'm also not sure that I understand slide 10 in relation to this one. Because the curve I've been looking at now, the slide 8 that we were looking at, shows improvement each year. Right? 2% a year. Slide 10 actually shows it's going backwards. So how do two slides speak to each other? Slide 10 shows you that the current position now, globally, all municipalities, is a 15% of improved, 16% of regressed, which is a minus 1% position of movement. Whereas the previous slide seems to show steady improvement. So perhaps you could explain that to me, this juncture there. And then I want to go to the issue that was raised, and also those comments by the Auditor General about lack of consequences of poor performance. And your own presentation, the last slide, I think, talks about consequence management will be applied. I would love to know, I'd love you to confirm for me, that every single case where there is a regression, no performance bonuses are paid to those responsible, including the MMs, CFO, anybody responsible for poor performance cannot receive performance bonuses. I would love the department to be able to tell me now. You may not be able to tell me now. But I'd love you to come back and say, yes, here's the list of 170 municipalities which have got a fund deal, they've gone backwards, and nobody's being paid. Nobody's being rewarded for going backwards. Because unless that happens, we're just allowing these guys to get away with murder. And frankly, some of them, the length of time that this continues is just is ludicrous. If there's no consequences, there's no incentive, they can't be rewarded for poor performance. And I think on that happy note, I'll leave it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting Chairperson. You know, I think it's very instructive, just following on repeat, as Jennifer Honourable Smith has just said, that in 20 slides, the word consequence only appears once. And I think that really speaks to the heart of the problem. And it's very clear, and I was lucky enough to send the Auditor General's report back to the Standing Committee on the Auditor General, and he was very scathing about the sort of general governance situation. But it's very important that we instill consequences for the poor performance. Now, you know, we have, for instance, situations where municipalities just over a repeated period of time, you know, ended up with disclaimers, have not submitted their financial statements. And the question I have is that, you know, not only are they not receiving performance bonuses, I'd like to be sure of that, but I'd like to know what action is being taken to remove incompetent, incapable, and you know, corrupt officials out of these municipalities. Because the longer they say, the longer this position is going to perpetuate. And I can tell you now, if the department doesn't get its act together and get moving on these regulations for Section 56 and 57, we are going to end up with a lot of bum officials in those positions for at least the next 5 years. And so, you know, I would again caution to get moving on that, because once these guys are appointed, prior to the regulations that disqualify many of them, we're going to be stuck. We also then need to ensure that there's consequences for lack of political leadership. Now, this is also something the AG highlights very carefully in its report. And frankly, this is not going to happen unless there are consequences for councillors and executive members who do not exercise their due diligence and their role and responsibility. And again, perhaps we need to start looking at creative mechanisms to ensure that there is leadership and oversight being addressed. Perhaps we should start looking at ways in which we don't allow municipalities to pay at the upper limit unless they've had a clean audit or there's been an improvement to their audit results. I can tell you, we start getting counselors from their pockets, I tell you, you'll be amazed at the incredible diligence they pay in ensuring that municipalities do achieve a clean audit. And their oversight and officials, I can tell you, will improve massively. The second thing is capacity. We've spoken at length as well about this in this committee before. CFOs who, you know, who don't even have a matric certificate, it's just not simply possible to run a municipality without that capacity. And then there's the cleanliness, and, you know, cut here again to, it's again something that AG highlighted. So we can have all the impacts and, you know, oversight in the world, if the information that's going to those impacts is not quality information, flowing out of a strengthened internal and external audit function, then really it's not going to be much good at all. And, you know, so I think that we really need to look at, the department needs to be assuring us how we're going to go out and beef up this internal and external audit function. Because, you know, for many of these municipalities now, and there's a long list of them, what does a disclaimer or a bad audit actually mean for them? It means one day of bad newspaper headlines, and then everybody goes back to their departments and, you know, calls them into their workplaces again, and, you know, that's it for the next year. And so, you know, unless we're going to embark, and the government's going to embark on a massive project to ensure that we are putting in place tangible and workable solutions to these problems, then, you know, I must agree with the Honourable Sir. The targets are a factory, and we, you know, they simply won't lead to an improvement in the situation. And then also just the point about, you know, I think that the link made, while I can see there is some, you know, some correlation, I think it's a rather tenuous link between audit outcomes and service delivery. I can tell you there are municipalities in this country that get a clean audit, but I think if one goes on the ground and looks at the services being delivered, they're almost non-existent. And that's because the audit opinions that are done tend to be a MFMA focus rather than on a service delivery focus. So I would submit to you, it's easy to get a clean audit and not do anything in your council. So I think we need to be very circumspect on that. And with that, Chair, you know, just say thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. And I would like to say, is this progress update with an eye opener to me, really? I want to congratulate the presenter, but I have some queries or something to be clear about this. the slide 10 that Peter talked about, I won't mention it because I was querying the same thing about what you have just said. In slide 17, the governance and the financial management, the presenter mentioned that there are some issues that are being addressed. I would like to, just one question to ask you that. What are the common causes of the best performance? Is it lack of skill or understanding? If it's only that, I then I'm not going to satisfy the lecture. To me, it's lack of commitment. And then what about corruption? And what happened in the municipality? Why are the culprits? What happens to the culprits that are, if there's any culprits in the municipality, what happens to them? I think we'd like to hear what is happening in the municipality as far as the corruption are concerned. Because the protests are made because of corruption. That's the main thing that's happening. Thank you.
Thank you. I do appreciate the good input here and the good report given. But when we go down to page 9, it tells you what is the observation regarding all these. It looks like all self-inflicted. You look at the culprits, we read those observations. It looks like the culprits are the authorities, and it boils down to poor, weak leadership. Now, that's why I say the leadership seems to be the ones responsible for not being able to run their departments or run their municipality in a proper fashion. And that's where education must come in. So if you look at them all condition of grants, certain municipalities for his activities or salaries, is underspending, shortage of skills, municipalities inadequately budgeting for repairs and maintenance, quality of infrastructure delivered is also very poor. Now, you put any job, I come from a construction business, and if something goes wrong, the general foreman, he takes responsibility, or the man, he takes responsibility. He don't go down without blaming all the workers or the staff. But the workers and the staff are guided. If they can't do the job, there's a door out, he goes get someone who can do it. And this is not happening. I think the way I look at it, looks like you get a lot of jobs for Pelz here that are keeping these grains. There's no real commitment in rectifying these shortcomings. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. I think one of the issues has been raised, but I also want to put my opinions worth in here, Jim. The 60% by 2012. Chairman of the department has put MISA into place. National Treasury has put in what is it called the improvement program into place. But besides MISA, how does the department see themselves assisting municipalities? Because I think rightfully it was said, when you look at the audit, it reflects more on MFMA. But there are other issues as well. There are service delivery issues. And a lot of those service delivery funding comes from sources, other sources. And so where's the monitoring and evaluation within the process? And I think my direct question to the department is, besides MISA, what role does the national department play in assisting municipalities to achieve this order? Chief, thank you for the 3-year comparative that we have. But if my memory serves me right, and I ask Shireen to go back 2 minutes, then you would find that we have asked the department to give us months ago already the municipalities where interventions have been made. Now, Chair, I'm asking that formally again in this meeting. And
That information is available. So it, at the push of a button, we can get that information. Because we want to ascertain the interventions that have been made, whether it has had any impact on the audit outcome that we see in front of us. Because we are aware that the department has made these interventions. But we want to see what, and then the department must talk us through that. Tell us, you made the intervention, this is how long that it was in place, and let us look at the audit outcome, and then you need to talk to us through that. Because we want to see whether those interventions really made any difference and whether it assisted the process. Not any other reason, chairperson, but to learn out of the outcome, to say what we need to do differently in our other interventions that we make. Further to that, chairperson, Municipal Systems Amendment Act. It was extended to last year, I can't remember exactly when, but it's almost a year ago that it was extended to. Now, if I ask the department right now, what has the department done in terms of municipalities that are still sitting with acting municipal managers? Because we have such situations where they are still acting municipal managers for years. And that act says that a municipal manager, Section 6657 manager, may not act for a period of more than 3 months. And if they act for a period of more than 3 months, they need to seek permission from the MEC within the province. And if they do not have satisfaction within the promise, in the province, they have recourse to the minister. So my question to the department is, what has the department done to assist or to deal with the issue where we have acting Section 57 and 57 managers since this new parliament, which is 2009, because there are such instances. And we will bring those instances to the department, to a meeting, if the department does not come up with them to tell us what the intervention has been. Because I see all of this, these issues as part of the problems that we are seeing on the ground. And therefore I say the department is not NISA, the National Treasury has got their intervention program, but what else is being done? Because I said this at the school meeting, Cheverton, where we were. The department isn't a bank. Too often we see money being thrown behind problems. We see grants being given to provinces, to municipalities. But where is the monitoring and evaluation of the grant that is being given to whether it be a provincial department or to a municipality? So I would like to see that, Chairperson. And then, I think while we're discussing this issue, let us formally ask for the department to give us their quarterly financial report, quarterly expenditure, so that we can determine what is going from the department to municipalities, to the provinces, and that we can track that. And this would also then give us an idea where we can say, but in terms of so much money being going off, can the department tell us how far those programs are? And it would assist us in our monitoring, our oversight and monitoring processes, Chair. I'm going to pause the Chairperson. Thanks.
Your input as question, no, I'm forgotten, instrument may come.
And my question goes to set 7, bullet 3, where the presenter indicated that municipality ministers produce most of the annual financial statement. My question is, did the department ask those municipalities what are the problems of not submitting those statements? And secondly, if yes or no, is there any action your department has piloted for those municipalities? And taking into consideration what has been highlighted to one of our members here, that the municipalities which are not performing well, they may not give the incentives. I would like to find out from the department that is there any system in place in terms of monitoring and evaluating of those municipalities? Because if there was a system in place, we wouldn't have a process around the country. Thank you.
Chairperson, thanks. I kept one of them. I think reference was made to, in this whole service delivery issue, reference has been made to the issue of non-budgeting for maintenance. Actually, I think we've raised this issue in the budget last this year and last year. And if we go back, you'll see that the FSC has made recommendation in 2008 already. Because the reality is that there are municipalities that don't have a revenue base. Now, if they don't have a revenue base, where do we expect them to get money from maintenance? Municipalities that are struggling are using their conditional grants for salary, which is a problem, which is why we're sitting with some problems that we see. So I need for the department to tell us what are they doing to convince National Treasury. And I know this is in the pipeline, but maybe to tell us how far they are in terms of looking at this, the restructuring of the fiscal framework and also this new grant that may come about with regard to maintenance of infrastructure. Because this is part of the problem that we're sitting with. It's a big contributor to the problems that we're sitting with. Again. Conditional grants that are being sent on salaries and general maintenance and day running of municipalities. If the department can speak to us on that particular issue, how are they dealing with in terms of if there's mid-funding, for instance, and it's used to crossing out, how they generally deal with situations like that. Is it just looked at and looked away and ignored, or is something being done about it? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think I'll skip. I'll skip the remaining. remember, I was saying before that maybe I'll repeat some of the questions because I want to ask. But I'll just mention some few. I also want to join members who have said thanks for the presentation, because the comparison is dated back on years. It highlighted us, give us an idea on how is the performance of some municipalities, and it is clear that there are some others who regress and some others are improving. So I just want to check on the municipalities, that the 8 municipalities that didn't submit their annual financial statement this year to the AG. Because I picked up one, the Mamusa, which is on the 3 conservative years, following year, conservative years, were not submitting. I just want to check from the department side. For the first time, maybe you can say didn't pick up that they are not performing. They are unable to be there, they don't have capacity to do that. For the second time, we didn't recognize, and also in your interventions, you said you have marked 108 municipalities that you have identified, whereby you have deployed 75 financial experts. I just want to check the 108 is amongst those who were regret, or is mixed for those who want to maintain their status of a financial report, And also, I just want to check, because during the course of the year when we are acting with the department, there are national officials that have been deployed to provinces. Maybe, what are they doing? How are they reporting? Because I think there are those who are supposed to detect whether the municipalities are assisting or not. And also, I just want to put an emphasis, because I just want to make mention of one municipality that I relied on, the treatment which obtained clinically. I think 2 months before, or 3 months before the announcement, there are some questionnaire sheets that the AG is submitting to municipalities whereby they do prior assessment on their performance under audit report. So they put spaces, like the sign of spaces, smiling faces, set faces, red faces, orange faces, for that questionnaire. So my district municipality, which is Kerstivan, they maintain clean audit because they can follow up that advice, which was a questionnaire from the audit general. That's what we check. Is that practice being done to all municipalities, or the audit general comes to municipalities through invitation or what? Because if those that procedure is being followed to those municipalities, it is going to detect early that there is something wrong in the municipalities that are doing, which will lead them to this outcome of audit outcome. So I just want to check on the department side. Is this exercise being done to all municipalities? Also, maybe on the department side can do the same if it's being done through invitation by the audit general. Maybe you make your own, the department can make their own assessment questionnaire, which go to the municipality and tell them, look, here they are doing something. Like the one in my district was saying, the only thing that will make them to obtain clean audits is the non-employment, it's the long acting of municipal manager and the CFO in Kerstivan, because they've acted for 3 months, they put an application for extension to that one, and that was going to lead for them to not to receive that clean audit, but they managed to, through interventions, the department to put that, to take that advice and ratify it. That's why they obtained an audit. I just have to check those nitty technical issues that a municipality needs to address if they are put as a matter of emphasis by the audit general. DG, I think it's less than 30 minutes. Now we are taking with the 20 minutes that I'm going to, a minute from the 20 minutes that I'm going to give to the DG.
Okay. What I want to the weather respond to take care of also, is it not in terms of the legislation or the departmental policy that should be applicable even to the municipalities in terms of the financial control system within, or the so-called internal audit system? Because the auditor general's report comes, after things have been, that has been done. So what is going on? The resources thing, or the policy that obliges the municipalities also to deal with these things immediately and pick up everything, like the one that the chairperson just indicated. We can't wait for so long and pick it up thereafter.
Actually, when I listened to the comments and questions, I was saying to myself, why didn't the acting DG take on the deputy director general here? Because the questions are about the municipality in general, the operation. So it's everything about municipality itself, which I was just saying that fortunately is here, because there was no way I was going to deal with the things. So when I listened to the questions, everything to the applications of the municipal act, But with those which I can assist, which I can start putting some of my thoughts on them, I will start with them. First, the question about the issues of remedial action plans, in particular for, I think there was a reference to the Northern Cape and Northwest, if I'm not mistaken. What happened as the AG issues the management letters, municipalities have to address those things by coming through this, by developing this remedial action plan. What is important, right, it also touches on some of the things which the chairperson was stating and what the honorable member was also stating, which will also make reference to them. In most provinces, when they put up the thing, what happens is that through this operation in audit coordinating forums, which is at a provincial level, the provincial treasuries are involved, the provincial coordinators are involved, the AG's offices in those provinces are involved. They also look at these audit remedial action plans and provide advice to municipalities. So that is another angle to it, so which comes back to the issues about the AG, that they only come at a later stage. The AG interacts with municipalities on a total basis, and that is part of the reason when he says, when he looks at, when he talks about root causes, to say one of those root causes is the issues that his messages, when he says his messages, he says the messages of the official of the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa in the various provinces, because they interact with municipalities. And in that regard as well, when municipalities interact with municipalities, sometimes they also call the Office of the AGRA to talk to some of the municipalities. So there is that particular interaction at the provincial level. However, outside what the municipalities themselves do, the provinces also assist municipalities in dealing with some of the things in terms of their support measures. For example, in respect of the Northwest, which is the one which has been struggling for a while, as we are speaking, because that is where the challenge is. So the Northwest Provincial Treasury has deployed almost close to 22 graduates who have gone through internal audit leadership programs in the provincial treasury, as well as in municipalities. The provincial treasury has also appointed its own service provider to assist 13 municipalities. So those are some of the 13 municipalities which are struggling in that particular province with the compilation of the annual financial statement in order to improve the submission of the annual financial statement. And that program of support for there, it will be running for this financial year and the next financial year. So over and above what municipalities are doing, provinces in terms of their support also, they are putting something to deal with some of the issues. For example, if you look at some of the issues around disclaimers which have been happening in the Northwest, again, there are those affected departments with the provincial COFSA taking a lead. They are also sensitizing municipalities on the issues of the issues to maintain records, to deal with some of the issues, and they have already started rolling some of the training. So there are all these sort of things which are happening. But again, like we said, it is all this support initiative as well as the ownership and accountability as well as dealing with governance issues within the municipalities, because it's a whole basket of things. For example, we talked about the municipal finance improvement programs in terms of deployment, which also talks to, in part, to one of the honorable members was saying, if we, when we look at how the Fienza Manje, because that program which is run by Treasury, and this is one thing which Parliament has to appreciate about the fact that when you talk about local government, there is a heavy involvement of National Treasury and Provincial Treasuries, because it was the Municipal Finance Management Act which is administered by the Minister of Finance. It's not administered by the Minister of Culture, you go to the Citizens Act and the Structures Act. So there are all these sorts of things which are happening, even at the provincial and the national level. So it's not that most of the things which have to happen, whether they happen or not, COPA has to take credit or has to take a fault for all of the things. So there is all this joint collaboration, because all of us, we got the route to play both at the provincial and national, the COPA and provincial treasury. So hire the National Treasury because it only took over the operation of the Municipal Finance Improvement Program on the 30th of April last year. Before that, it was done by DPSA. The deployment of this finance expert, it was done by DPSA under a program which was called the Yanza Manager. And when we looked at the stage when Treasury took over, there were about 40 deployments which were made by DPSA. When we looked at the 2010-2011 financial year in terms of those deployments, for about 86 of those municipalities where deployments were done within sufficient marks within that financial year, just to look as to what has been the impact on the audit outcome. It has not been encouraging. Out of those 36 municipalities, 13 of them, which is 86%, those municipalities achieved the disclaimer and adverse opinion for the 2010-2011. And about 14% of them were qualified. But the issue here, again, is underlying the issue. So that is when all these phases come together, the implementation of the laws and the support which happens, because those years among the deployments may have been there on the financial aspect, but what have been the issues which have been happening in those particular municipalities? But having said that, is also the reason why the National Treasury has decided to revamp that program when it took it over into what we call the Municipal Finance Improvement Program, to deal with some of the deficiencies in the application of that program, because whereas previously it was more like supply driven, now it has to be demand-driven. Municipalities make applications to Treasury, and before Treasury approves the application, there are clearly stipulated agreements which the municipality has to enter into in order to ensure that when these finance experts are deployed, are going to that municipality to do exactly what they are supposed to do and nothing else. And also for the municipality itself to take accountability at a higher level, because you can come with a support that this other person will support that is effectively in case. So it addresses one of the questions which was addressed as whether there is sort of monitoring and evaluation. One classical example is the Sienza Monitoring Program. It has written in its entirety in order to take into account some of these particular things. So I will move out of that. In terms of the issues of audit outcomes vis-à-vis service delivery, and honorable members have commented on that, like I said, my take was it's difficult for anybody to be authoritative about it, so we can talk as long as we can talk about it, but personally, I don't think I can say there is anything authoritative, because it mixed, there are a number of issues, and honorable members have correctly captured most of the issues which may be involved there. In terms of the targets, yes, most people have said the targets are very ambitious. But however we feel as government or us to be people given, we need to do all that we can do towards going somewhere to meet this target. So that is the view we are taking at the national level, including with provinces. So that is the message that we are putting, because it's better to go working on those targets, even if we don't achieve them completely. But at least we shall have moved, because before the thing, if you were to do the analysis for previous years, probably you might find that things have been bad over the years, but things are starting to move regardless of the fact that some of the things are moving marginally. But again, based on the observation which has been made about the marginal improvements and all those kinds of things, it calls into question that the mere fact that we need all of us, including municipalities, both the political machinery and the administrative machinery, to be involved on this thing, because, for example, when you talk about the Municipal Systems Act regulations, which we are talking about, when those get implemented as well, it's part of some of the interventions which comes, because you start dealing with this animal in a holistic picture across the board. So when you tackle it from one angle, you do not actually succeed. So that is what has to be done. If you have your MISA programs coming, you have the MSAA regulations coming and all of these things coming, and some of the reforms which the Treasury is doing coming together, it may also assist to take us somewhere. In terms of what some of the honorable members talked about the confusion about slide number 8 and slide number 10, I checked it, the slides talk the same thing, because here, on the right column, it says that 15% improved while 63% remained unchanged and 16% regressed. When you go to slide number 10, at the national, MNT national, we couldn't write it in full because otherwise we could only have three columns. It appears that there is an information for the national picture because that information was giving the total national picture. Again, it says the terms of improvement is 15%. If you look at remained unchanged 63, regressive 16 is the same information. However, the other column start talking about the provincial things, what was happening. So what was happening within a particular province vis-a-vis another in terms of those things are not the same. And hence I was saying that if you analyze these provinces, you see that some of them are net gains, some are net losses. But when you average the things at the national level, it gives you this information which we have under the national picture here, which is the same information which we had in the other slide. Now, the other thing, it was the issues around governance issues which comes in there. One of those things is also about the issues, for example, if you talk about audit committees, is the people who serve in the audit committees, but some of the things which we also want to look at it is also just that to look at issues of training for audit committees in order to assist with some of those things, and the National Treasury may be looking at some other things on the internal audit, because that is holistically with the issues of the budget and treasury offices, which has the National Treasury get too much involved on some. So some of those things, there is movement which is happening, but it may be that in terms of that movement, it may not be at the peak where we are supposed to be. When there was a question about what the Prime Minister, what is it which the department is doing, which probably the ACNDG will say something about it. But for me, it's across the board. All the things we are talking about right now, the turnaround strategy with all those five critical areas which were mentioned in terms of the breakdown in the slide. If you deal with all those issues, actually, that is what they are trying to do, because you start tackling the animal as a whole to deal with. You start going somewhere. I have already talked to some of the things on the municipal interventions. If you look at it from the end of we said that in terms of the issues of what happened to those municipalities, it didn't yield the desired effect, which may also indicate that there are bigger things which need to be tackled. I won't deal specifically with the issues of the Mamusas and some of the municipalities in the Northwest in terms of the backlog in terms of the annual financial statement, but part of the reasons for some of those municipalities, there have been a little bit of a backlog in terms of the addressing the issues in the which relate to the annual financial statement in terms of submission. But again, municipalities can submit for what, for lack of a better word, you can call it a malicious complaint, when you submit something, but because of certain findings which the AG raised last time, which have not yet been addressed, again, you will get qualified for the same thing. If you have a GCD and add that, you may still get it. So those are some of the things which some of those municipalities in the Northwest are dealing with to deal with some of those things, because what was the closing balance in terms of the things, it will have to be an opening balance in the next financial year. So if it was wrong, it has not yet been fixed, again, the other thing will be wrong, but there is a number of things. But in terms of some of those provincial support measures which I talked about, they are to deal with some of those issues. In terms of the question which has been raised on the issue of repairs and maintenance, as well as the issues where salaries get used for conditional grants, at the moment, in terms of the funding mechanism, the issues of dealing with the issues around repairs and maintenance is part and parcel of the local government equitable share. You got the municipal infrastructure grant, which deals with putting the actual infrastructure on the ground, that is on the capital side. On the operations, the local government equitable share that is the one which provides municipalities with funding to deal with the operations to ensure that those infrastructure work, and in terms of the budgeting, part of the funding has to be taken from there. But again, it comes back to the issue of a debate as to what extent do we as a country need to move toward micromanaging local government or not. Because the issue with the local government equitable share constitutionally is an unconditional grant. It's money which flows to municipalities for them to deal with a variety of issues and through their budgetary mechanisms to deal with those particular issues. What is it, a conditional grant like me, that is the one which has to be dedicated in that. So to an extent that you start saying something is not happening, is it whether we'll come to a conclusion where we dismantle the local government equitable share, we make it a conditional grant, which is also a bigger issue because there are merits and demerits throughout. But like I said, the National Treasury, through the accounting system, they are working on something which will assist in terms of the standard chart of accounting, which will assist in terms of issues around budgeting to see what municipalities are using this fund for, which will make it easier when people want to ask questions. For example, if you want to know, for instance, what exactly are you putting for this particular thing, even if it doesn't become the conditional, by way of monitoring, it might be easier even for the municipality itself and everybody else at the provincial and municipal to see what is happening. If some of the funds which are through the conditional grants across the board, including the municipal infrastructure grant, get used by municipalities for a people other than that which is there in the framework for that conditional grant, including salaries, what happens because of the challenges which national government has had over a number of years as to how do we stop the thing? Through the Division of Revenue Act, I think that provision has been there for the past two or three financial years. It allows that if municipalities at the end of the financial year they have not spent this conditional grant across the board, it doesn't matter whether it's make or not, what they would have to do is to motivate to the National Treasury with evidence that this money which we say it has been underspent, for example, it was indeed spent. If it was spent, the second question, what was it used for? Then a municipality will have to give that evidence and provide that particular evidence that indeed it was used in terms of the conditions of that conditional grant like me. If then that happens, then there is no problem. Either the National Treasury can approve the whole over process in terms of some of these funds if they are good reasons to be used in the financial year. But if a municipality cannot motivate convincing that those funds were used not for salaries or anything except that which is in the framework of that grant, what happens is the National Treasury has got the power and it has started activating this at the end of the financial year. It will not out of this 100% of money which flew to Municipality X, 10% of it. They are not convinced that it was used for the purpose it was supposed to do. What will happen? That money gets offset for the local government equitable share. At the start of the financial year, through the budget process, municipalities know how much quarterly they were getting through the local government equitable share. But, and that is what we have started doing over for the past 2 years, including the last financial year. That money, if that municipality, 100 million, for example, was supposed to move into it, then it will be offset if there is 20 million, which in terms of the MIG was not used for what it was supposed to be. It will be 100 less 20 million, so it's only 80 million which will go because that municipality is unable to convey that, in fact, that money was used. So that is a mechanism. And nationally, we came with that radical mechanism in order to deal with what the honorable members are saying, we close our eyes or not. But looking at how the things, it was a problem for quite a while, for a number of years, and that is the mechanism which we are used. So if people don't use the grants for what it is, whatever it is, if it's a conditional grant, then there is a mechanism which we use to offset the response. So those municipalities start feeling the pain from them. I think I have responded to some of the issues. I will stop there.
can I sit?
Yeah.
Chair, I'll be very short. Firstly, I'll start with the questions that the Honorable Chair was asking around Mamta. When we're doing the analysis, we realize that Mamuta has not necessarily been submitting for the past 3 financial years consecutively. We then said Mamuta should come and explain to MINEC on Thursday. The mayor come and explain why they are not submitting. But we didn't only take Mamuta. We then said let's take the badge and the one that is really the one that got a cane in the previous, in the 2 consecutive years. So we took Tanzania district. We said they should also come and present on Thursday. We also took one municipality in KZN called Emadangin, which moved from party 5 to P. And then we said they should also come and share as to what is it that they need to move from party 5 to P. So those were some of the things that we have done after the analysis of the report by the AG. Now, with regard to the 108 municipalities, in those 108 municipalities, they are forming part of the 23 districts that we are focusing on. So we are not only looking at financial management issues, we are looking at the whole range of issues in those municipalities. And they were not necessarily chosen in terms of the audit outcome, because we're saying the audit outcome is just but one indicator for the performance of a municipality. The role of those officials that are in provinces, I think in the presentation we didn't say TSUs, we said SDFs. We looked at their roles in relation to some of the challenges that have been brought forward by the AG in terms of political management governance issues. To say if you have a person at a province, that person must be able to interface with the political component in terms of saying what is it that the political component needs to be looking at. If we say a municipality has not has received an unfavorable audit opinion, what then becomes the role of the political component of that municipality? Because the role of the political component has an impact also on all the governance structures that you create. It is not going to assist to have an audit committee that will never meet with the executive mayor or the mayoral committee. Or when they meet at all, we are not necessarily going to consider. So those were some of the things that we have looked at. Now you asked the issue around the faces, the green, the yellow, and the pink. Normally when the auditor general starts with the auditing of a municipality, in the steering committees, the first steering committee, they will indicate all their issues. And then the second one, they will indicate that here you have this. And then they monitor the improvement within that audit cycle using that for all the municipalities. So it is in all municipalities, not necessarily in one municipality where the tool is utilized. The one other issue that was raised by colleagues is the issue around the does the audit outcome concur with service delivery on the ground, and the issue of clean audit versus service delivery, and whether we should give a performance bonus to a person that is a municipality that is getting an adverse or a display. At the moment, we don't have a view, we don't have a policy perspective from the department. What I'm going to indicate now is just a personal view based on the experience. If a municipality building is bent and you don't have any information, that municipality gets a disclaim. Now, are we going to say the officers that are there are not going to be assessed for performance because the building has been bent and the outcome is a disclaimer? So that's one. The second one, in terms of the analysis, we are realizing that even in those municipalities that have got a clean audit, there are service delivery protests. Now, if there are service delivery protests on a daily basis, and the municipality has got a clean audit, are you going to say we are not going to be providing or giving a performance bonus to somebody, or we are going to give a performance? So I'm trying to indicate that the tool itself becomes very difficult to implement. The issue of removing incompetent officials and what is being done, I think this is the issue that Mizi was talking about. It's an issue that when the committee approved the amendment of the Structures Act, it was meant to deal with this particular matter. System Act. It was meant to deal with this particular matter. The issue is that how are we really monitoring that aspect at the moment? We are monitoring that aspect, but I can indicate that there are two provinces that are really reporting, because they are within a particular time frame, a province, the MEC has to be reporting to the national minister. There are two provinces that are doing it that well, and that is KZN and the Western Cape. But we are still looking at what kind of monetary mechanisms are we going to be utilized. It also goes to municipalities where MMs are acting for more than 3 months. We have certain areas where we are intervening, but we have not necessarily got the result of that intervention. I think in one area is in Nelson Mandela, where we have met with the MEC to look at what has been happening there, and it is not only the MM but also other Section 56 managers. There was one issue that was raised around commitment. This is very difficult because commitment, we may not necessarily be able to measure commitment from our side, but it's an issue that we have noted. The issue around looking at the previous interventions, I think that is the issue that we need to really look at, because there were quite a number of interventions that happened, and then we may need to analyze what kind of impact has happened, because what we presented in terms of sense of mind, it was showing that if you have 33% of municipalities where financial experts were deployed and they got a disclaimer or an advert, it might lead to certain leadership aspects, because this the environment itself must be conducive for an official to be able to work. The issue of do we monitor grants that are transferred to municipalities, the answer is yes, we do that. We can provide that report on a quarterly basis, because every quarter we report to also our own internal audit committee on what is happening in municipalities in terms of grant transfer. But the issue is the performance around that. Now, the issue of what is the department doing broadly on the fiscal system itself, we have started a process with National Treasury of reviewing the whole fiscal system of government, because currently, like we've always been saying, that out of the municipalities are only getting 8%, because they are supposed to raise the 92%. And what about those municipalities that are not necessarily viable? The issue of what are the other interventions that the department are doing besides MISA. Currently, MISA is one of the interventions. Secondly, we have managed by the end of May to have all plans from various municipalities that are focusing on those five areas, and we will be monitoring the movement of municipalities around those five areas: financial management, issues around anti-corruption, issues around service delivery and infrastructure delivery. So those are the issues that we have action plans with municipalities, and we'll be continuing to monitor those. I should think those are some of the questions that we asked. In relation to slide 10 and on the improvement and the regression, I realize that Ms. Z answered that, but I just realized that in terms of the overall improvement. Today, there is only 1% improvement if you look at the previous financial year and the fiscal financial year. Now, the regression that you were talking about is a regression perhaps where a municipality might have got a 10-point in the past, but then it gets financially amplified. Then it's a regression. So that is how that should be looked at. I think those are the few things that I can talk to.
Thanks, Vichy. I think that as my community is passed on, we will need to come to conclusion. And it's best I prefer to say the
end. Proposal.
Okay.
Quick proposal. The department, the ECDG said that her policy with the department on the issue of performance contracts. I would very much like to see the department develop a policy, because I don't agree with the statement you just made. I know their personal views, actually, all of them, they should be example. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see a policy coming out of the department. And I'd also like to answer the question of that. How many of these were with regression? I wasn't talking about poor, regressive municipalities, where are the elements getting performance bonuses?
You want to respond to
I think on the last question, we have not done that analysis in terms, but we had a slide in the one that we have removed where we're indicating municipalities per province, where the 22% came from. But we didn't align it like we did with the sales delivery project. So it's an area that we can look at. Thanks.
For the presentation, maybe rising from the discussions among our senior Kobakon Society one. Who may come in.
I propose that other provinces also must be encouraged to report and time permits should just be given to them. Thank you.
I think now my company to put an emphasis on units on this one. If there are no free problems with others, they compile others, they don't. We must put an emphasis that they must also report. In conclusion, I think emanating from the discussion in this today's two methods, it has been raised that yes, we agree. There were discussions, some other municipalities and some other municipalities improvement. I just have to put this in record for the sake of media outside. Maybe I think this presentation was going to be taken to outside people to get the real substance of the audit outcome rather than the information, the distorted information that they receive outside there from the media. Not even maybe trying to, I want to put it in trying to defend on that there is a slow pace checking on how we're going to meet our target of Operation Clean Audit in 2014. So it means then that the department must double the effort of their intervention. I think in your next presentation, DG, you must see clearly in those municipalities that we need to target, those who have regressed and those who have obtained disclaimers and adverse opinion from the AC. We need to see a program of action on besides the other stakeholders like treasurer, commercial treasury, auditor general's efforts to make some interventions to assisting in such. On the department side, we need to see a program of action on your support on those municipalities as described in the constitution that you need to give support to provinces and to municipalities. The program is action too, so that you'll be able all of us together to meet this deadline of Operation Clean Audit. Remember, in those few words, I would like to thank for your contribution as part of our mandate of doing oversight and monitoring. I think we meet next week whereby we will be further, we will be informed in due course further discussing the matter on our first item, which is material, so that we will put it into conclusion. The meeting stands adjourned. So the department, thank you for the presentation.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, thanks, that's
sure.